This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Kia ora and welcome to Reserved Recommendations. This is a show about great trash, difficult art, and our complicated relationships with art and culture. My name's Hugh, I'm the host of the show, and I'd like to take this opportunity to put in a very mild content warning for the show as a whole. Sometimes our recommendations on this show are reserved just because the thing that we're discussing is in some way not good, but sometimes there are aspects of the art or artist that may be confronting for some people. Check the episode descriptions for more information, and do be aware of your listening environment. That's right, you're listening to Reserved Recommendations, and today I am talking to Bijan Aga, who is an author and comics artist primarily, although I met her because she sent me very kindly an advanced copy of a role-playing game to have a look at, and we might have a chat about that towards the end. But first, welcome Bijan, how's it going?
Oh, it's just a wonderful day here in Montevideo, Uruguay. I am having a fantastic time with my cats and cooking and having a great day.
That is excellent news. And you have the distinction of being the first guest on this show who's not like a New Zealander or based in either the UK or America, like the outside of, I guess, what you would claim the Commonwealth maybe is what I'm thinking of. Anyway. Welcome.
Yeah,
congratulations, I guess.
Thank you. So I actually am originally from Seattle, Washington, but once all the funny business started happening with the elections up there, it was about almost 10 years ago now, we decided to come down here to Uruguay. And I have been wonderfully accepted by this amazing community. I've been able to find all kinds of opportunities. My neighbors are wonderful to me. The food is amazing. The culture is fantastic. I highly recommend anyone who's looking for a temperate vacation spot, definitely come here to Uruguay. You'll have a great time.
That sounds amazing. My mental map of South American colonial history is not great. Is that like Spanish speaking or Portuguese speaking primarily?
Well, see, it's funny because it's actually kind of a gradient because we're wedged right between Argentina and Brazil. So we're down here in Montevideo, the biggest city, and it's solidly Spanish speaking here because we're just across the water from Buenos Aires. But if you go further north to the small little villages that have very few people in it, they start speaking what's called Portuñol. It's half Portuguese, half Espanol. And so it's sort of a spectrum as you start moving north. And once you get to the border, everyone's bilingual. Everyone speaks both Portuguese and Spanish.
There's like shared linguistic DNA between the two of those as well, if I remember rightly. I had a girlfriend a very long time ago who'd gone to Spain on exchange. So she spoke Spanish fluently, and she had like internet friends who she would chat with who spoke Portuguese, and they could like understand one another badly enough to make a joke out of how bad each other's Portuguese and Spanish was.
Yeah. You know, my maternal grandmother was from Denmark, and she said that when they were crossing the borders back and forth between Denmark, Sweden, and Norway, they'd write everything down because the language was so different spoken that they couldn't understand each other if they were talking to each other. But it was so similar written because the pronunciations were so different, but the writing was almost identical. So they just write notes to each other when they were at the border, and they would basically it'd be mostly comprehensible. And it's the same thing here. If we get packages from Brazil, you know, we get packaged foods and stuff from Brazil that have all the Portuguese on it, and they like some letters are off and some of the words are a little different, but by and large, I can understand that banana means banana. You know, it's not really that different.
Yeah, yeah. The big example here is, of course, there's the various Pacific Islands who all have large populations in New Zealand. And many of those speak a language or speak languages which is very similar to New Zealand Māori. So if you know some New Zealand Māori and you work out which letters get switched around between languages, you can work out, like written down a fair amount of what's going on. Anyway, the thing that we're actually here to talk about is the, and this is another thing which has very specific New Zealand history that we'll get into, is the, particularly the original series of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which, I mean, this is, I managed to watch the first episode of the original series to kind of remind myself of the vibe, and like solid electric bolts of nostalgia, because it is a very specific, incredibly early 90s thing. But I guess my first question is, like, what was your connection to this TV show?
So, you know, one of the things about Power Rangers is that it was a very low budget production. So one of the things that that people don't know is that in the United States, even within the United States, it was not on a major network. It was up to individual stations in different regions to try and pick it up. So we had this one sort of offbeat station called Q13. It was on Channel 13. And, you know, having the unlucky number, they sort of leaned into it, and they would get all the, like, the very strange shows that other people were too afraid to pick up on. They had the Ninja Turtles, they had Power Rangers, they had Batman the Animated Series and Spider-Man the Animated Series. And so I remember, as part of this programming block, it was just really exciting, out there science fiction. Like that, like every episode of every one of those shows was really trying to stretch your idea of how the world works, what is possible, what is reality, even questions like what is sanity. And so I remember, even as a very young person, being very compelled to watch shows that asked bigger questions than do my friends like me or should I steal apples? So I really felt like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in particular was a show that wasn't talking down to me as a child. It wasn't amoral. There were certainly morals that you learned from it. It certainly had a point of view and a perspective and an artistic meaning. But it wasn't, you know, trying to be like, okay, now today we're going to learn that you have to tell the truth when the teacher asks a question. It was much more sophisticated approach to how to try and communicate complex ideas.
I mean, I think it's because the thing that immediately struck me watching just the first episode is the way in which the team of American teenagers. So for people who somehow aren't familiar with what the original episode, original season of original series rather of Power Rangers was, it was essentially a Japanese TV show that got overdubbed with English voice actors, with American English voice actors. And then all of the uncostumed non-fighting bits of the show were essentially a separate American show about these teenagers, finger quotes, because they are quite obviously not teenagers, and their daily lives with American actors in this intensely 90s high school setting. And the initial introduction of the team felt very Captain Planet to me, which is, another show which is very much like five teenagers with attitude save the world. But there was something about like the 90s style of being deliberately diverse.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's actually something. So that's something that I talk about a lot. I call it the Black Power Ranger effect. Right?
Yes,
there was this issue that some people had where the Black Power Ranger was played by a black man and the Yellow Power Ranger was played by a Vietnamese woman. And on the one hand, obviously, it's not a good look that you have them almost like racially coded. But on the other hand, it is more complex when you get into two things, its actual effect, and the other thing being the way they made the show. They actually made a pilot before the one that we see on an everyday basis, where they had totally different actors and a totally different racial mix and different things. And they didn't like those actors because they didn't portray the characters as well as, because one of the things, like you said, it was made from Japanese footage. So you already had footage of how these characters moved and behaved and interacted. And so you needed the character, the actors, to have the physicality to match that kind of movement and that kind of, and so one of the things was that the Black Power Ranger was a very good dancer. And the person who played the Zack, the Black Ranger in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Walter Manuel Jones is a phenomenal dancer. He's a fantastic dancer. He actually invented his own style of dancing, incorporating martial arts into it while working on the show, and they incorporated that into the show. So
I was going to say, that's one of the first things that they introduce him with, is that he kind of gets into his fighting stance by doing this kind of shimmy move, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that's from the original Japanese footage. So he had to match the physicality of the Japanese actor. So, and then the other thing is that it's actual effect. When you are from a marginalized community who has been color coded in such a way that you are called black or yellow or red or whatever, there is a negative component in showing people who are powerless or who are flawed in you know, terrible ways, who are associated with that color. But the Black Power Ranger was not just the Black Power Ranger. He was the Black Power Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
He was totally embracing the fact that he was a black man and he had a black superhero costume and he had a powerful animal symbol. He had a powerful weapon that he could use. He had a team of people that he could rely on and call upon. So he was, you know, and he was an aspirational figure. That's another thing. A lot of people give the first season very little credit because there's very little drama, but it's not a drama show. It's more of a morality play. So these are not really characters who are supposed to have problems that they then overcome. They're really supposed to be aspirational figures like Superman, who they, you know, they do the right thing to show us how we can also do the right thing.
And so, I mean, I was going to say I feel like, and I don't know where this fits entirely in the chronology of the show, but I feel like the introduction of the Green Ranger, which is kind of a seminal turning point in the show, is one of the first times when I encountered the – it's a very anime trope of, like, the recurring villain who then becomes part of the team.
Right, right, yeah. It's actually – it goes back into the difficulty in translating – the footage from Kyoryu Sentai Zyuranger into Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, because they had originally premised the show off the 1984 Chōdenshi Bioman. So when Haim Saban went to Japan and he saw the first Sentai show, because this is a long-running series, it's been going on since the 70s. In the United States, superheroes are more associated with comics, but in Japan, they're more associated with TV. So there's been this long-running series of interconnected shows. And what they do is at the end of each season, they reboot and they have a new series of characters. They don't have to pay the actors more. They just pay new actors the same amount. They get to create new characters, new setting, new themes. And so in 1984, Haim Saban, the creator of Power Rangers, was in Japan and he saw Chōdenshi Bioman. So he based his whole Power Rangers thing off of Chōdenshi Bioman, which was about, you know, some teenagers with attitude who were selected to save the world and they had a little robot sidekick. But by the time he actually got it off the ground, it was now 1993. So it was almost 10 years later and the footage looked 10 years old. So they had to use the newest Sentai footage, which was Kyoryu Sentai Zyuranger, which was vaguely dinosaur themed. It's only two of them are dinosaurs, but they're all extinct massive animals. It's complicated, but it comes from the fact that the Japanese don't really think of classifying dinosaurs distinctly from other extinct animals. And actually Kyoryu literally means fearsome dragon, and that's why the Green Ranger has a dragon.
Right.
But so they have this horrible problem in translating it because they had set this all up for Bioman, which was about five teenagers with attitude, and now they were dealing with a show that was completely different. Kyoto Sentai Zyuranger was actually about a group of people from a prehistoric time who got locked away, and then they were unlocked when their fearsome rival, a witch, Bandera, came back to Earth. And so their whole thing is not being five teenagers with attitude. Their whole thing is being fishes out of water in a society they no longer recognize, and humans have different values, and so they're sort of like a, like I said, a fish out of water story. So almost none of the stories could be translated one to one. So they had to come up with very, very imaginative ways to make the footage work for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers premise.
And I mean, this is part of kind of a long tradition in American kids TV, right? Like, this is a similar thing to what they were doing with Samurai Pizza Cats. It's a similar thing to what they were doing with at least the original incarnation of Transformers. It's just exactly. It's more common in animation than in a live action show.
You know, it's interesting because you said Samurai Pizza Cats, because that's Haim Saban too. It's the same guy who came up with that same idea.
It's kind of his specialty, right?
Yeah. And then Transformers was interesting because it was actually like several different toy lines in Japan, and Hasbro just bought all of the molds and started making them as one toy line in the United States. So that's why some of them are vehicles, but some of them are handheld objects and they're the same size. And that's because they were originally competing toy lines in Japan. So it's very weird how people from the United States keep taking these Japanese ideas and sort of remixing them for an American audience. And then sometimes they find their way back to Japan. I remember it was very weird for the voice actor who she played Bandera in Zyuranger. And then she voiced herself as Rita Repulsa when they dubbed Power Rangers into Japanese. She said that was a very strange process.
Yeah, I can imagine that being deeply surreal, because not only are you voicing yourself, you're voicing yourself saying lines that you weren't originally saying in the footage that you're dubbing over.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we mentioned right at the start that there is some very specific New Zealand history with this show, which is that it was banned quite early into its run. New Zealand hasn't banned that much kids' TV, but we banned Power Rangers, of all things, because of concerns about depictions of violence and kids mimicking this. And you mentioned this in the conversation we had via Blue Sky DMs when we were setting this up, and I'd completely forgotten it because I remember watching it as after school TV. But actually, now that I think about it, I watched it as after school TV, and then I remember the whole debate happening in the news and it eventually getting banned, which, like, it's a very strange moral panic to have in retrospect, because the violence is at least in that first, you know, episode that I watched to remind myself, it's the kind of like pro wrestling violence where you can really see the actors helping each other do the stunts.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the first episode heavily features the American fight scenes, and the American fight scenes are technically inferior to the Japanese fight scenes. Now, I say that about Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 1, because as they went on, they actually started poaching talent from Japan. And so in later seasons, you actually cannot tell the difference between the choreography from Japan and the United States. But in the first season, you absolutely could tell that the American footage was very pro-wrestling. And then there's not very much suit fighting in the first episode, but if you go into the later episodes, the suit fights are much, much more realistic in terms of violence. But I really feel like it was weird to ban it because it's not very reproducible. I mean, it's not like someone's taking out a baseball bat and just whacking someone over the head. It's really like they're doing these really high flying kicks, and they're doing somersaults and spinning punches. And it's just how does a person even begin to try and imitate that without already knowing martial arts? I would think, if anything, it would inspire people to take up martial arts as a practice, which is very discipline focused. And it's not about going around hitting people. It's about learning.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect, and of course, at the point at which it was banned, I was like 13 or 14, so I was not paying close attention. But I suspect that there was a vein of anti-Asian racism in that. There is an unfortunate history of specifically anti-Asian racism as quite a deep thing in New Zealand culture. As recently as like, this would be like maybe 10 years ago, but like the Labour Party, so that's the centre-left party, were trying to have discussions about the state of our housing market because, like many places in the world, ain't enough houses. The houses that there are owned by too few people because lots of boomers have centralized their wealth into holding enormous investment portfolios, and there are even bigger investment companies that make, you know, a tiny amount of people an enormous amount of money. But Labour did this whole thing where they looked at the Auckland telephone directory and found all of the finger quotes Chinese sounding names. And we're attempting to sort of scaremonger about like international ownership of property, but it was specifically trying to pull on this like very insidious anti-Asian thing, which, as I say, is like old and deep and nasty in New Zealand.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's so interesting because it's not like the original Super Sentai was apolitical. It's not like it was saying, oh, you know, Asian culture is superior. In fact, in many ways, Sentai and its associated series, Kamen Rider and Metal Heroes, they all ask very serious questions about the stability of modern society. For example, Kamen Rider punches Nazis. That's his whole thing. He punches Nazis. And like I was talking about, Kyoto Sentai Zyuranger, it was about people who were coming out of a long hibernation and were now questioning the moral reality around them. Is this a society worth saving? So in many ways, the entire, you know, mythos of these characters, you know, going back to the 60s and 70s, they've all been really about questioning authority and questioning the values of Japanese society and if they actually pertain to the modern day. So it's Power Rangers itself, I said it wasn't always, you know, trying to talk down to people or teach you the lesson of the day, but it did have a moral center, and that moral center was that we are empowered by knowledge, and that was every single episode. Every single episode, it's first of all, it's a witch who's who is the enemy, meaning that it's a magic. It's the unknowable mystical forces that are the enemy, and then the powers that work for good are science, that we learn about how we can defeat our enemy. And every episode is fundamentally has the same format, where the monster attacks and they know nothing about it, so when they fight it, they can't defeat it. Then something happens and they learn about whatever its weakness is, and they're able to implement that weakness through knowledge. So every episode it is telling you, learn more about your world to overcome your problems. So I think that's a pretty noble, you know, thing to try and teach kids.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a mistake to expect people who are like hindbrain racist to have that level of analysis. I think, you know, this is a cousin to the moral panic that happened in the UK when I was living there as a smaller child, which led to they aired Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but they aired it under the name Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles because using the word ninja linked it to this world of like exotic Asian violence, which was part of a related panic about, you know, the whole video nasties phenomenon. Basically, people were very worried about people watching like cheap, gory Hong Kong horror kung fu movies, and because foreign equals scary. I really think it was that kind of stuff. And only, I think, 4 years later, maybe less, New Zealand TV was airing Dragon Ball Z, which is significantly more aggressive in its violence. I mean, they were airing the Funimation version, which cuts a lot of the violence and has people go to another dimension when they die. But nonetheless, like, even the Funimation one compared to Power Rangers is pretty strong stuff.
And that's another thing is that in Dragon Ball, they're always fighting people. But in Power Rangers, especially Mighty Morphin Power Rangers and Zoolander, they're fighting pieces of clay that were magically brought to life to be monsters. So the people they're beating up are not human beings by any stretch of the imagination.
No, exactly. And if you get it deeper into the analysis, while Dragon Ball is absolutely about, like, practice and be diligent and you can get stronger, it's also about how if you punch a guy who does genocide, he can then be your grudging best friend. And I don't think that the Green Ranger is not a Vegeta by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Yeah, and that's one of the main things that they did in because, again, Zoolander, one of the main components is that they've been locked away and they don't know what's happened in the meantime. So part of Zoolander is that the Green Ranger comes back and he has a different set of understanding from them as to what should be done and what shouldn't be done. And how. So that's where they come into conflict because they understand the world differently. But in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, they wanted to make it clear that he was completely not at fault for his actions. So it's mind control. It was a magic green candle that mind controlled him. Although I do like the twist that he remembers doing all of it and he has to live with those memories. That's a pretty interesting twist on it.
Yeah, again, it's like it's a level of storytelling in terms of building characters that you don't really see in American kids' TV until quite a lot later. I mean, I think you would see comparable stuff in like the Batman the Animated Series, maybe. But in terms of like fantasy things particularly, the UK does have this tradition of like kid-focused dramas. There's this long-running one called Grange Hill, and there was another really long-running one called Biker Grove, which are – they're kind of like soaps for kids, and they kind of – they do deal with some heavier character stuff. But in terms of, like, character motivations in what's essentially like an action-adventure show, definitely.
Yeah, and you know, it's very interesting. There's a distinction that I have myself thought of and discovered in between Japanese and American superheroes. And so one of the original Japanese superhero, the Golden Bat, shows up in history right almost exactly about the same time as Superman, and totally independently. They had no connection to each other, the creators. And the Golden Bat, you would think is more like Batman, but he's really more like Superman in that he flies, he's invincible, and he's from a different land. He's an Atlantean who time traveled 10,000 years to the future to our present day. And so one of the things that's really different between a Japanese hero and an American hero, and you can see it in these two characters, Superman wants to save the innocent, therefore he hates evil. The Golden Bat hates evil, therefore he wants to save the innocent. It's a matter of priorities. And so that's why you'll see in American media a huge emphasis on saving people and preventing disaster from occurring, whereas in Japanese media, the disaster will sometimes be fully underway by the time the heroes get to respond, and they will respond by defeating the bad guys first. Now, again, this is not universal, right? I don't want to too generalize because even Sentai has actually had a whole season just about first responders. And so there have been attempts to try and push back on what's seen as an overly aggressive culture. But it is very distinct in that you would think that the American heroes would be more aggressive, but Japanese heroes tend to be much, much more aggressive in defeating the enemy in almost every form of media.
That is a fascinating discovery. The thing that I had always heard as a line in kind of dividing between Japanese and American pop culture is that Japanese audiences are, as a rule, much more comfortable with tragedy as the resolution of a story arc. Like, they're much more willing to have a series about, like, a hero who fights bravely, but then in the last episode, Spike Spiegel dies. You know,
right,
spoilers
right.
for Cowboy Bebop, which is nearly as old as I am. Like, you know, but it's, you know, they're way happier to, or it's a much more of a cultural convention to do that. But I hadn't thought about the kind of protecting people versus defeating the enemy angle. So for radio listeners, you are listening to Manawatu People's Radio. Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. And this is Reserved Recommendations. This is a radio show and podcast about great trash and difficult art. This episode, I am talking to Bijan Aga, a comics author currently based in Uruguay. And we've been talking about particularly the early seasons of the TV show Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. We are going to continue that discussion in a second, but first we need to take a break for station messages. We will be back right after this.
If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. NPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out npr.nz for more information. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate. If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app.
And we're back. You're listening to Manawatu People's Radio. Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. This is Reserved Recommendations, and today I'm talking to Bijan Aga about the series Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. We were just talking before we took a break about, I guess, the complexity of characterization, particularly with regards to the Green Ranger, which was kind of uncommon for that style of show at the time, and as I suspect related to its roots as a Japanese show. One thing which is not very complex is, at least at the start, the portrayal of the human villains Bulk and Skull, who are some Bebop and Rocksteady ass motherfuckers, if I may say so. Like, they are some classic, like, Saturday morning cartoon kids TV villains. You got the big one and the skinny one. They laugh at each other's bad jokes. One does violence. One thinks he's smart and isn't. Like, it's very, very cartoony.
Yeah. And, you know, they are such a strange inclusion. They serve almost no function other than to stretch out the 22 minutes. And if you get later in the series, they really don't know what to do with them. They become cops. They become PIs. They start working. At one point, they have two monsters hidden in their shed, and they're trying to take care of them like pets. It's a very strange inclusion. And honestly, I think the only reason they're included at all is because those actors are so funny that they just knew that they wanted to have this little glimmer of magic on their show, even if it didn't make sense with the rest of the series.
Yeah, and I mean, I made a point of how kind of clownish they are, but actually one of the things that happens in the very first episode is that they charge into a karate class that Billy, the leader, is hosting. And Bulk, who's the big fat muscle guy, tries to demonstrate his skills and eventually falls on his face. But actually, you know, he pulls off a creditable high kick. The actor has some real agility, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think all of the characters in general come from the fact that like they were able to do some very imaginative and very powerful things with these characters for the same reasons that the show is so weird and wonky. The show is so weird. There are so many strange choices, and it's almost like outsider art because it kind of is. The people who were tasked with writing these characters had never written for TV before. They especially had never written for this kind of format, which did not exist yet, where you're taking a foreign show with an unrelated plot and chopping it up into a new show, and you had to work backwards from the footage. So this kind of thing had literally never been done before. And they were asking people who had no experience writing for TV just to do this, you know, just like as the head writer, as the main writer on this. And so you'll even see people you wouldn't expect, like the father of one of the actors shows up as a person who's writing, because there's so few people in the world who have any experience writing for this show that they keep using the same people over and over because they're just barely getting to get a hang of it. And, you know, there's many Power Rangers shows way down the line that do this really well. And I think my favorite is probably RPM. It's a completely different show than the Sentai footage it's based off of. But all of those people are standing on the shoulders of giants, people who made this wonky, bizarre, strange little show out of scraps, little bits and pieces that they just had to glue together into something that made sense. And so there's a lot of episodes where the plot doesn't really follow or the characters are acting kind of weird. But it comes from the fact that they had no one in the world had any idea how to do what they were doing. And they were just making it up as they went along.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, first episode, the dialogue is incredibly stilted. yeah. I mean, the things that they're saying aren't nonsense necessarily, but they are talking like no teenager has ever spoken. and the like the clean, bright youth center where they all hang out and drink juice and learn karate has this like incredibly chintzy. It sounds like, you know, are you familiar at all with like Japanese visual novels? That like
yes,
incredibly
yeah.
chintzy light jazz kind of backing music that all of those had, particularly in the 1990s. And again, like what teenager in the 1990s was listening to what sounds like shopping music from another planet for
right,
fun
right.
In a youth center? Like it's all so, so strange.
Well, that's sort of what it goes back to something I brought up earlier, which is that they're really not trying to be a drama, where in a drama you would present the world more or less the way it is, even if there is a fantastical element. People are reacting to those fantastical elements in a way that makes sense, and the characters have problems and flaws that they need to overcome over time. But this is not that. This is not a drama. This is more like a medieval morality play. The characters are fully formed beings. They don't need to learn anything. What they're going to do is they're going to demonstrate to you what you should do in this situation. And so they're really not trying to be real teenagers. They're trying to be what they hope children will aspire to become as teenagers.
Yeah. Yeah, that does make sense because, again, you know, like if you watch TV for teenagers or sort of tweens, particularly from that period, you see a lot of people who are transparently in their 20s playing people who are in their
yeah.
in their teens, but very much so in that show. Like these are young grown adults, but definitely grown adults.
Yeah, and it had a lot to do with the fact, one, that labor laws in California restrict what people under the age of 18 can do so that they can't work full days. So obviously, even if they found a great actor who was exactly the right age, they wouldn't be able to work their schedule around them. But the other aspect of it is that the people that they selected, it was a non-union production. So the people they selected were not SAG-AFTRA members. They weren't members of the actors union. They were martial artists, gymnasts, and dancers. And so because they were so physical, they were able to portray the physicality of the characters, but they had never acted on film before.
And none of them had any.
Yeah, yeah. and you know, and I really want to give them credit because they have acted in things since, and they have really evolved as actors, every single one of them. They just recently did Power Rangers special on Netflix, Once and Always. And a lot of the actors came back and reprised their roles. They are much more sincere. They're delivering their lines with a lot more depth. They have much more sophisticated facial movements. I really think the reason they were so rough in Mighty Morphin was just a lack of experience. I mean, I know from creating personally, experience trumps talent every day.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, what you cannot take away from them is that while they are unpolished performers delivering kind of strange lines in a way that is a bit unconvincing, they are all very charismatic. And so that counts for a lot. I was just thinking, because, you know, the thing about Power Rangers is that it is a franchise which is still, I believe, ongoing now.
It's a little bit different. So what happened is there was they stopped making the TV show for a while. They were acquired by a new company, and now the new company is starting to make a new show now, but it may not use Sentai footage. So it could be a completely brand new reboot. So it's not really active at the moment, but we're hoping it'll become active soon.
Right, right. I guess what I'm thinking is that because it's so long running and has this very strange genesis, you have all of these things that kind of become hallmarks of the series as it goes along, which kind of happened by accident, which is like it's a very odd way to build up lore in a series as it goes along.
Well, you know, it's true of almost everything where they had no idea what they had on their hands at the time. If you're looking at Star Trek, Star Wars, Pokemon, Power Rangers, when they were making it, they thought it would be a one and done. They thought they'd make, you know, one movie of Star Wars, they thought they'd make one season of Star Trek, they thought they'd make, you know, one season of Power Rangers, and then that would be it. They'd all move on to other things in their careers. They had no idea that this was going to explode into a mega franchise.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, famously, at the end of Star Wars, Luke kisses his sister, and the reason that happens is because in terms of what was actually written down on paper, she wasn't his sister yet. Like, no one had made that decision.
So, and you know, and Power Rangers got kind of screwed in their not planning. So what happened was is that like I said in the original, in the first half, Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers uses footage from Kyoto Sentai's U-Danger. But the Sentai franchise reboots every season. And that's so that they can retain previous fans, but they can also acquire new fans. And because one of the problems with a lot of things like comics or soap operas is that there's so much lore that you have to learn to catch up that a lot of people don't bother. So it's a big barrier to entry. So by rebooting every season, Sentai keeps it fresh and they don't need to worry about the lore. But Mighty Morphin Power Rangers wanted to keep going as Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So the first season, they had used up all of their Zyudanger footage. The second season, they commissioned the company that made Super Sentai to pay actors to wear the old suits and use monster suits from other shows to create just some footage. And then they would just make up whatever they wanted. There would be no narration because there was no reason for there to be dialogue in Japanese. And then they'd send it to the Americans, and then they'd just have to make something with it. And by the third season, they had basically no Sentai footage left. So they were doing everything themselves, and it was costing too much. So the fourth season was actually Zio, where they totally rebooted the powers. They had new Zords. They had new everything. And so, you know, that's when after that they stopped being – a continuation, and every season was just a new thing.
Right, right. And at some point there, production also shifts to New Zealand because we are now the place where everyone makes all of their stuff. And at this point, the story becomes rather closer to home because one of the one of the recurring characters in the New Zealand or recurring actors in the New Zealand produced version of Power Rangers is this guy, Rene Naufahu. So he's a Samoan actor who is distantly related to my wife because once you get into New Zealand Samoans, the like who is whose cousin becomes like you just they run into each other all over the place. My wife's maiden name is Schwalga. Everyone with that surname in New Zealand is Samoan, and they are all related. There are no, as far as we can tell, original German Schwalgers in New Zealand. It's all one very, very large, very widespread Samoan family. But Rene Naufahu, as all New Zealand actors of note do, was on a TV show called Shortland Street, which is our homegrown, incredibly long-running hospital soap opera. And is like anyone that you have seen who is a New Zealander of note has been on Shortland Street. That's where that's where Temuera Morrison comes from. He famously was in the first episode where the first line addressed to him was "You're not in Guatemala now, Dr. Ropata," which is just completely insane. But Rene Naufahu, unfortunately, was convicted for grooming a series of women through private acting lessons that he was using for sex pest reasons. So there is kind of a stain on the show for us.
Yikes.
However, I mean, that doesn't necessarily reflect on Power Rangers. It's just a bit of very strange New Zealand TV history.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the entire time that Power Rangers was being produced in New Zealand, it was not allowed on TV in New Zealand. The ban was lifted in 2011, and by then they had stopped filming in New Zealand. So I read an article by Nick Sampson, a Kiwi actor who played the yellow Mystic Force Ranger. And he said that he was young enough that he had never heard of Power Rangers when he joined the production. And that after he was done filming, he kind of forgot about it. And it wasn't until he left the country that people came up and were like, "Oh my God, you're Chip from Mystic Force. Can you please sign with us?" And so he had no idea what Power Rangers was outside of New Zealand. And so he goes to the United States, he goes to Canada, he goes to the UK, and he's mobbed by fans who recognize him.
That is a very, very weird situation to be in. I mean, the normal New Zealand actor export industry is that we export Māori actors because Americans find them ethnically unplaceable, and New Zealand is a bland enough accent that you can superimpose other things on top of it. So there is a particular guy called Cliff Curtis who's been in just so many things and almost never as a Māori, which is what he is. He's almost always playing just sort of, well, some variety of brown person, often villainous.
Yeah, yeah.
By way of wrapping things up, because we're slowly coming towards the end of the show, like, what do we take from this? Like, is there anything on TV that does this kind of thing anymore? I kind of feel like there's not, because the like Nickelodeon and Disney Channel machines for just making a vast quantity of like tween focused content entirely in-house in a very controlled way, for a given value of controlled, I suppose, are so big and so powerful now, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting because the original show and all the way through to the current day, there's been a huge emphasis on being a moral example in the show. And I think more so than the fighting and the special effects, what we can take away from this is that there is something powerful when we collaborate between cultures. Because there was this wonderful, beautiful show called Kyoru Sentai Zyuranger, which was about people from another time exploring a new world that totally was, you know, alien to them. And someone took that show and they made it about five friends who all have totally different backgrounds and different skills and different ideas about what it means to be a good person. And they all have to work together to try and create a common good. And I think that's what keeps Power Rangers going, because if kids just wanted to watch really choreographed fighting, they could watch kung fu movies. If kids really just wanted to watch, you know, superhero stuff, we have plenty of superhero stuff. If they wanted to watch giant monsters fight, we got decades of that. It's not really about the aesthetic. The aesthetic certainly helps. It's very cool. I like it a lot. But the core of the program is about collaboration. It's not one person going off on their own and being a lone ranger and taking on the world by themselves. It's about people who literally cannot succeed unless they collaborate. And so every story told in Power Rangers is about working together, forming new relationships, finding a way forward where you all have something to contribute that's different from one another. And I think that's really why people still to this day care about any given form of Power Rangers or Super Sentai, which, you know, they're inexorably linked at this point. So a lot of people discover Super Sentai through Power Rangers, and it has many of the same themes. It's a very powerful show in many regards. If you ever want to watch a Super Sentai that was never made into a Power Rangers, Sentai Jetman is an emotionally powerful journey. And I think that there have since Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 1, which is a very wonky little show, since then there have been some really beautiful Power Ranger stories told, particularly in Space and RPM and Time Force. I feel like those ones, someone really went through the time to really try and craft a story that could mean a lot to a lot of people. And so I think there's been some beautiful things that happened from it. But with this first Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 1, it's this wonky little show that could. It's a little show that barely functions. Everything's held together with, you know, duct tape and dreams. And they somehow made a show that was just special. It just has that sauce. It just has that something nice that makes you want to keep watching. It makes you want to keep seeing what happens to these characters. Makes you want to see what the monster is next week. And I really think that the core comes down to the fact that it's a story about collaboration. I think that's the main thing.
Well, thank you so much for talking, Bijan. This has been a lot of fun, and it has inspired me to remember a show that I had entirely forgotten. or not entirely forgotten, but I had forgotten quite how of its time and of its era it is, and quite what, like, as you say, an incredibly specific aesthetic thing it is that was, for the short time that we got it in New Zealand, incredibly influential. You know, people really did go crazy for Power Rangers in the brief time they were allowed to watch it. What I normally do is wrap up by asking if there are other things you would recommend. You've sort of covered that. There are, of course, just reams of other Super Sentai stuff that people can go and find if they want. Do you want to talk a bit about your thing that you are currently working on? Because there is this complicated universe of comics and novels and now a tabletop role-playing game, all related to a time war fought against vampires.
That's correct. I am the author of the Time Wars universe. It is a collection of comics, novels, and we're working on a tabletop role-playing game. We're also working on a video game, but I can't disclose any details other than that we're working on it.
I mean, and video games are one of those, like, they're done when they're done kind of projects.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So the idea is that I wanted to be able to tell kind of a timeless story about good and evil. But one of the main problems is that humans do not exist in a purely evil state. I believe in the redemptive possibility of all humans. And so I created the idea that there were these vampires who are manipulating human history to create classes of people who would not be missed if they were abducted and turned into blood for the vampires to consume. The idea being that so many of the problems in our society are systemic, and these systemic issues are being perpetuated by people who are really trying to hurt us. So I took this idea, this basic premise, and I said, what does life look like from the perspective of someone living in a war with time travel. And so I've got a collection of stories. They're all available on my website. I've got Cobra Olympus, which is about a trans-Muslim superhero who gets messages from the future in 2015. And she has to go on all these wild adventures to try and defeat alien technology and the vampire's plans to use different kinds of monsters. I've got the legendary X-Knights, which are it's pretty Power Rangers inspired. They're transforming martial arts superheroes, and they fight the vampires as well. But they're in our future, so I wanted to talk a little bit about where society is going. And they're all queer, but they're all queer in very different ways, and they're all from very different parts of the country. They have very different backgrounds. So I wanted to show sort of that Power Rangers spirit of teaming up with people that you might not necessarily think to, but who can be just as good a friend to you as anyone else. I've also got Ash Gray and Saturn Olympus. That's a comic about a gay, interracial, interfaith marriage in the 1800s, 19th century. So they are queer cowboys, and they've killed one too many vampires, and now the vampires are hunting them.
That all sounds amazing. So if people want to get all of these wonderful things, what is that website? Where can they go and find it?
All right, so it's jamsheedstudios.com, and that's spelled J-A-M-S-H-E-E-D studios.com. And we've got a Kickstarter going on right now. It's the top banner on our website for an anime-inspired comic called The Adventures of Zero and One, about a non-binary youth who finds themselves stranded on an alien planet that's only inhabited by morphing robots. And so it's about language barriers and cultural clashes and trying to find your way in a strange new world. So I think people will really enjoy it.
Thank you so much, BJ, and this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
You've been listening to Reserved Recommendations, a radio show and podcast from Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatū. The show was produced and presented by me, Hugh Dingwall, and I also composed our theme music. It's called Sack Jazz, and you can find it at wolfboy.bandcamp.com. If you enjoyed this show, why not go ahead and share it with a friend? You can find the last 10 episodes of this show at npr.nz/show/reserved on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you want an episode older than that, try searching for Reserved Recommendations on YouTube. You can find me at Objective Reality on Blue Sky, or send emails to objectivereality@gmail.com. You can also follow Reserved Recommendations on Facebook or Instagram. And finally, Manawatū People's Radio is a non-profit community access station. If you like this or any other piece of their fine audio programming, why not fling them a dollar or two? You can go to npr.nz/donate for more information on how to do that.